The NFL regular season wraps up with a flourish. Washington is going home after a disaster. What's next for Kirk Cousins? Aaron Rodgers can't be stopped in Detroit. Falcons rise to the top of the NFC. Gary Kubiak retires. Chip Kelly is gone. Mike McCoy too. All that and so much more in the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. Andy, I am officially calling an end to the 2016 NFL regular season.
Well, good. And then in a few days, we'll do our playoff preview show. And I love this time of year. I love wild card and divisional round weekends coming up. But a lot to go over here to kind of put the bow on week 17 and get us propelled into wild card.
Absolutely. A much more interesting week 17 than I think a lot of us expected. And like Andy said, Thursday look ahead show, we will have deep dives on all the playoff matchups. But right now, we're going to take a look back at week 17. And let's start with topic number one. And that is the Washington Redskins nightmare day, playing a Giants team with nothing to play for. Giants left their starters in there, but boy, this was a terrible loss for Washington. Knocks them out of the playoffs. I guess the question now is Kirk Cousins, and I'll put it like this. They are better with Kirk Cousins coming back next year. They're not going to want to hit the reset button at quarterback at this point. Kirk Cousins, I think he lost some money in this game. I mean, he's probably looking at more of a, I don't know, an Andy Dalton type of deal where it sort of puts you in the second half of annual salaries among quarterbacks, and maybe it's something they want to escape in 2 or 3 years.
The other option, they could just put the franchise tag on him again, and I believe that tag would cost about $24 million. He's at around $19 million now. And they might have to do that, Gary, because I agree with you that Cousins, and he'll make more than Dalton because the market's gone up, and I think he'll – but I get what you're saying. He's not going to break the bank the way that new quarterback contracts in the past have done, the way the Flacco deal did or the Romo deal a few years ago. But someone's going to want to overpay for him because we've seen what happens to these teams that don't have quarterbacks. And we're going to talk about coaches who got fired a little bit in this show. And a lot of those teams are going to be teams that didn't have a quarterback. So someone's going to want to overpay for him. And so to prevent that, Washington, I wouldn't be surprised if they wind up having to franchise him again. But it was not a great performance from him. And it's that interception that people will be talking about. And it's an easy play to break down. He threw the ball late across the middle of the field at the end of the game against two-man coverage. Yeah. And two-man means everybody's in man-to-man, plus there are two safeties over the top. And the reason you can't throw the ball late over the middle of the field, which you really shouldn't do against any coverage, but especially two-man, is because if there are safeties over the top, those safeties are in the middle of the field, and so the defenders in man coverage in the middle of the field, they're playing underneath the receivers. They're in trail technique. So you have to throw the ball through one of them to make that work, and that's not going to work. And that was the problem there. It's just a really bad quarterbacking play at the worst possible moment. But he's had a good season overall. He hasn't had a horrible season by any means. I think he's been a good above average starter within the context of their scheme still.
Yeah. I mean, we talked early in the year. He had some issues in the red zone. That last pass, there was a lack of velocity on it, too, because he sort of had to move off his spot, and he had to duck to avoid the pass rush. Our senior editor at the MMQB, Matt Gagne, had texted the two of us and said, that is a throw that only Aaron Rodgers should attempt. And he's kind of right on that. And maybe not even Aaron Rodgers should attempt that, but Aaron Rodgers can at least get a significant amount of zip on that throw and sort of try and get it there before a defensive back can make the break.
Yeah, because Cousins was falling to his left, and so it becomes much more of a pure arm throw. And Aaron Rodgers is the only QB in the league who's good enough to throw with only his arm and not his legs at all. Maybe Stafford is as well, but it doesn't matter how hard you throw the ball. If you're throwing through a defender, the defender's still going to intercept it too. So I don't think Rodgers would have pulled the trigger on that one either.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure Rodgers wouldn't have pulled the trigger because he never throws late over the middle. That's like his That's like his mantra. That guy is allergic to interceptions. But yeah. Yeah, I mean, when I say Andy Dalton type money, I'm talking you know, Dalton signed a sort of slightly above average for annual value deal that right now sits at the bottom of the league among starting quarterbacks. I think that's what Cousins has to settle for at this point. And look, a month ago, you know, he was doing the rubbing GM's hair, and everyone was saying how he's gonna get one of these monster deals, and it looks like it's not really in the cards at this point.
Well, I would back a little bit off of that, but I get what you're saying. It was not a great day for him. Things will change. The market's going to change things, though, Gary. And the Dalton deal, remember, Dalton was not a free agent at the time. He signed that under a current contract, so there wasn't as much open market influence on his negotiations. Cousins is still going to be a very wealthy man after this season, but yes, we agree that he absolutely lost some money today.
Well, we will talk about that more and more in the offseason now. But, yeah, they got some other decisions. They got DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon are free agents. You know, they spent a first-rounder on Josh Doctson and didn't get a whole lot from him this year. And one more point I wanted to make on this game was essentially how good that Giants defense is. And we've talked about this a lot. And look, I'm not a huge Phil Sims fan. I don't get on him like other people do, but he tends to talk in vague generalities during games. But he said something during the Raiders Broncos game that I thought was appropriate for this Giants Redskins game, and that was you can sort of go half speed on offense. You can pull back on offense. You can play conservatively and sort of not go all out, but you don't really do that on defense. Either you're playing defense or you're not playing defense.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Giants play defense. There's no sort of half-ass conservative way to play defense, and the Giants obviously did not do that today.
Nope, they did the third-level blitzes that they've done well all season, and by third-level blitz, we mean secondary. They're blitzing defensive backs. They did combo blitzes with them. They'd bring a linebacker or multiple defensive backs, and they out-schemed and out-executed Washington on several big third-down plays doing that. It's been a theme of theirs all season long, and it's probably the reason they can do it is because they have corners they trust in one-on-one coverage, and so those blitzes and those corners, that's why they're going to the playoffs.
Yep. Long offseason coming up for Washington.
Number two.
Let's jump on to topic number two. And this is going to be a great wildcard matchup. This is who the Giants will be matched up against. They're going to Lambeau. The Green Bay Packers go to Detroit, win the NFC North title game. These teams, this is not the do-or-die game we were expecting, because once Washington lost, both these teams were in. It was just a matter of who was going to be home against the Giants and who is going to have to travel to Seattle. Packers go to Detroit, get the win. Aaron Rodgers is absolutely on fire right now.
Geronimo Allison was the guy that stepped up today as well. And then the other one was Jared Cook. And isn't that interesting? Because those are two guys who were not in the equation 5-6 weeks ago. And Cook's been a big difference maker, as the broadcasters at NBC pointed out. Rodgers had told him that. He gives them such formational flexibility. He can line up anywhere, and so wide receivers now can also line up anywhere, and they're a more diverse offense. And it's a team that really needs to win through their formations, because they're not an overly complex offense in terms of route combinations. They've gotten a lot better there, but they're not the Patriots or the Redskins or the Saints or something like that. They rely on guys to win talent-wise, and if you can get guys in mismatches in the formation before the snap, then you're fully augmenting the advantages they have in their talent. And one of the things we've seen from that is Jordy Nelson, since Cook has been back, Nelson's played the slot a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah, and no Randall Cobb tonight. We talked a little Geronimo Allison on the Thursday show. He had a nice little night tonight. He made a nice one of those scramble extended plays. He made a nice play in the red zone.
He did. And he had a wheel route that he caught against Cresden Butler, who's the bottom of the depth chart corner for the Lions. They had some issues in the secondary tonight. They were very thin at cornerback. Don Carey also played the slot at times. It's no slight at him, but that's how you know they have issues. He's a backup safety. But he took advantage of that. And a few weeks ago, we talked about Allison, and I told you his production came as a function of the offense. He wasn't making the plays, not to slight him, but that's just the way it was going. Tonight was a little different. He made some of the plays. He was the creator at times. He beat man coverage. He has, I don't know if he's a speedster per se. I need to see more. But there's a streaky vertical element to the way he plays. And I think he kind of stretches things north and south a little more, certainly more than Cobb does. Cobb's more of an east and west guy.
Yeah. Yep. And look, Lions side of the ball. Hey, they're going back to the playoffs for the second time in 3 years. That's certainly a nice accomplishment. A little bit disappointing that they don't get the first division title since back in 1993. But, you know, they're in the tournament. They go out to Seattle. Offense not sharp once again. Stafford missed a couple throws. Also dropped in a couple of beautiful throws. I just kind of wonder if that, you know, if that broken index finger is kind of affecting his consistency.
It might be. The other thing I wonder about is with Theo Riddick out of the lineup, at some point that's going to catch up to them, and I think it started to in the second half of this game. He gives them valuable, kind of like the Cook thing a little bit. He gives them valuable dimension in the passing game, but in his case, it's even more important because he's their running back, but he can play slot receiver for him, and that kind of offsets some of their limitations in the ground game. And Zach Zenner's been playing more at running back for him. He's done a nice job. I don't think he matches up well to Seattle, though, because Zenner, I think the reason he's playing is that he's a good shotgun runner. He has, like, kind of a delayed downhill rolling element to his running style, and that's conducive to running out of shotgun. And they're having to do shotgun more because of the finger injury with Stafford that you mentioned, Gary. But Zenner and a delayed running style, that doesn't match up well to Seattle. Those linebackers are so fast, and those defensive linemen penetrate so much. Maybe delays are a good idea to offset that schematically. I'm not optimistic for their ground game against Seattle. And so then it becomes, well, what do you supplement those yards with? You had Golden Tate on quick slants or quick screens, but you need one more element. Golden Tate alone is not going to offset your issues at the running game. And I think that's where the absence of Riddick becomes a real problem.
Yeah, Riddick out for the year now. I guess there was a chance he might have returned for the playoffs, but he is on injured reserve. They will not have him. Detroit goes to Seattle. Packers will host the Giants. And one last note in this game, Quentin Rollins, Packers corner, hospitalized with a neck injury. That's already a thin secondary for the Packers. Sounds like Rollins will, you know, he avoided any catastrophic damage, but, you know, certainly he'll be a question mark for the wild card game, as far as we know right now.
Number three.
Topic number three. Let's go down to Atlanta. Kind of flying under the radar a little bit the last couple weeks, maybe because they've been a little bit drama-free. They've just been sort of winning games with relative ease, and today was no exception. They ran it up. Easy win over the Saints at home. Another big offensive day. They score, 38 points in this one, and really were in control. 38-32 final, but it was not as close as that final score would suggest. Saints ran up three late touchdowns in what was garbage time. But Andy, you are in your extra point column on Monday. You are coordinating the Falcons as your NFC favorite.
I like them in the NFC. I'm not over the moon banging the tables on them, but that's, you're not going to be that way about any team in the playoffs because all 12 teams you can make a case for. That's why they're here. My case for Atlanta, you know, they've won four out of their, well, actually now it's five out of their last six games, and their point total on offense in the victories against Arizona, it was 38. Against Los Angeles, 42. They hung 41 on the 49ers, and it was almost all zone running where they killed them with. 33 on the Panthers, and now 38 on the Saints. Mm-hmm. We're not naming great defenses there, but we are naming NFL defenses. And this offense, it has its running game absolutely rolling right now. It's offensive line and running backs that are contributing to that. It's a zone running game, and zone running games, when they get hot, they can be hard to stop. And their passing game is so hard to play against because they do such a great job with their distribution of personnel. They'll put different guys in different spots. Often it's out of base personnel, so they've got your slower defenders and their base packages on the field, and they destroy you with that. Their route combinations are great. I think I've been high on Washington over the years. I think Atlanta has surpassed Washington as the best schemed offense in the NFC this season.
Yeah, well, certainly shown it as of late. The Saints obviously were not in playoff contention. They go down with this one, and now all sorts of questions about whether or not Sean Payton returns in New Orleans. That will be something to track this offseason if you are a big Saints fan. Andy, before we move on, what if I told you that you could prepare an entire meal in half the time it takes to listen to our show?
I would jump all over that. I know where you're going with this, and I would argue it's even quicker than that. Depends on the show. Our Monday show, I think you could do it in a third
Monday
of the time.
Show, yes. Yes, I'm talking about HelloFresh. It is the meal delivery kit service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week they create new recipes with step-by-step directions that take about 30 minutes. I made the one in our household, and I'm incompetent. I am usually not allowed to turn on the stove or the oven because I've set a couple of fairly major fires in the past couple of years. But I made some shepherd's pie, and it was freaking delicious. And if I can do it, certainly you can do it, because everything just comes in a kit.
Yeah, and I had that shepherd's pie as well. It was very good. The food shows up. It's extremely convenient, and it's high-quality food. That's the other thing that's neat. I was tickled to get this delivered to us a few weeks ago.
Well, it was, and my wife and I both work, and we, you know, we used to get delivery service all the time in the city, and the problem would always be the produce would always essentially be garbage by the time you get it. HelloFresh's stuff, it's fresh. It shows up fresh. It's like the stuff you would pick out if you went down to the grocery store and sort of took the time to get the best stuff. You know, they employ a full-time registered dietitian who reviews every recipe to make sure it's nutritionally balanced, and they use the freshest ingredients. So here's a deal for our listeners, and it's a great deal. For $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter the promo code 10, T-E-N, when you subscribe. That's HelloFresh.com, promo code 10, T-E-N, for $35 off your first week of deliveries.
Number four.
All right, on to topic four, and we are talking about the Denver Broncos' big season-ending win. They get a little revenge on the Raiders, who obviously ended up taking over the AFC West for most of the year and really dominated the Broncos in Oakland earlier this season. But Broncos get the win. But the headline here, Gary Kubiak is retiring due to health reasons. You know, everyone was talking about this Rams job as the job that everyone was going to want. I think the Broncos job is the one that everyone wants now. This is a team that is obviously they're Super Bowl 50 champions. You fix this offense, and you have a team that's as good as any in the NFL.
You do. I'm curious what's going to happen with defense. We're hearing a little bit about Wade Phillips, and there are questions, will he be back? And if you lose Wade Phillips at coordinator, that defense fundamentally changes. It's still a very good one, a great one, in fact, because of the talent they have. But that's a very well-coached defense as well. And I don't want that to get overlooked just because they have the pass rushers and cornerbacks. They've got they have the resources, no question about it. But the way they deploy them and use them and how they change up their calls, it's a well-coached defense. So, Gary, we could see a team that just a year ago won the Super Bowl, they could all of a sudden unexpectedly be redefine this offseason depending on who's available and who they hire to coach them, head coach, and then really on both sides of the ball.
Well, I mean, look, the offense underwent a huge change this past season. I mean, this is a completely different unit under Trevor Siemian here, and this was, you know, as I watched this game today, the first drive, Broncos had first and 10 five times, threw it on all five of them. And then they got a sixth first and 10, and that's when they actually ran for a touchdown. And they kept it on the ground. They were, you know, they sort of stayed on schedule today, and they got to stick with the run game for once. And look, Raiders did not offer a whole lot of resistance on either side of the ball, and this was a fairly easy win for the Broncos. But yeah, they ended up rushing 40 times for 143, and you'd have to think this is how they wanted to play all year.
John Elway makes a lot of big moves, too. He is aggressive with that, and he's used free agency very successfully. A lot of teams have had success in free agency the last few years, it feels like. Maybe that's an off-season topic we could explore. But if they want, they could probably, and I'd need to look at their rostered salary cap closer, but my sense is they could reshuffle the whole deck if they wanted to on offense, because they don't have an expensive quarterback right now, and they don't have an expensive running back either. So, and they're not overly priced on the offensive line. Russell Okung's not a cheap left tackle, but they're not paying a bunch of money to these 10-year offensive lineman guys that we hear about. So maybe we see something go along those lines. They could rewrite everything on offense if they wanted. Again, depending on who they hire as their coach.
Yeah, certainly one to keep an eye on. And by the way, Andy, a lot of Juwan Thompson sprinkled in at fullback today. I know we've been talking about the absence of Andy Janovich. And it was nice to see. Nice to see this offense get on track and sort of finish the way they wish they had played all year. And obviously this is a very disappointing season for the Broncos, but they finish it in style. A couple of notes from this one. I mean, this went pretty much as this was your nightmare sort of personified if you were a Raiders fan. Matt McGloin, just boy, he was not getting it done, and then he suffered a non-throwing shoulder injury. Also seemed to take I don't know if it was a shot to the jaw or if he was concussed. But he ended up coming out. Connor Cook came in and looked, I guess, as good as you could possibly look for a guy who probably hadn't taken any practice snaps all season until this past week when he was elevated to number two. And they got a little decision to make at quarterback heading into the playoffs. They lose the AFC West because of this one, and they will have to go to Houston in the wild card round.
Yeah, the irony is that they're facing the only other team that also has questions at quarterback. Yeah. And these teams played a few weeks ago in Mexico City. It was actually a very nice game. And we could see two different quarterbacks in what we saw in that game, which would mean kind of two different teams. If you said they might have a choice at QB, they'll be lucky if they do, because the alternative is they have to go with Cook, and McGloin's not going to be healthy, and we don't have any information on that. And I would imagine if the Raiders, the thing they need to do is keep that under wraps as much as possible to try to get some advantage out of this, and at least not let Houston know who your QB is going to be. Now Houston's going to do the same thing to them though as well. So, interesting game, interesting playoff scenario with these two teams, certainly.
Yeah, and we'll touch on Houston in a couple minutes here. From Rich Eisen's Twitter, should Connor Cook start the next week for the Raiders, he would be the first quarterback in the Super Bowl era to start his first career game in the postseason. So a little neat little note there. I'm sure Rich himself did not look that up. Probably some poor researcher.
No, don't throw Rich under the bus. Rich looked it up. He doesn't. Rich doesn't have a Jeff Irwin. He doesn't have his own Jeff Irwin.
He wishes. He wishes he has Jeff Irwin. Donald Penn tweaked his knee in this game and came out late, as if things couldn't get any worse for the Raiders. He at least on social media, I don't know if it was Instagram or Snapchat or what, said he'd be okay for next week. We'll have to keep an eye on that. And interesting little feud between Aqib Talib and Michael Crabtree. Talib just walked up to him and ripped his chain. You know that chain Michael Crabtree wears?
Yeah,
that's always kind of like, oh, that's really weird that he wears a chain. Talib, after a play, just walked up and just ripped it off of him. It was weird and violent and the kind of thing that looked like it was something out of a B movie or something. But
yeah, no, I grew up listening to just enough rap music to know that you do not do that. That's a federal offense in some cultures, and I'm sure Michael Crabtree did not take kindly to that.
It was they were screaming at each other from opposite sidelines afterwards. It was a weird thing to see. It was such a calculated, ice cold move by Aqib Talib. It wasn't one of those things where it was a shoving match. He just walked right up to him and just two hands on the chain and just
he planned it. You're saying he planned it.
I'm saying he planned it. And I'm saying, Andy, hands off my chain next time we get together.
Number five.
We are going to stay in the AFC West, and this is the Kansas City Chiefs, your AFC West champions. They go out to San Diego and get the W. Chargers were game early in this one. Chiefs end up pulling away, and this was a game where, I mean, look, Travis Kelce for all he's done in the last couple weeks. Obviously, he had a role as a blocker in this one, but he only had one catch in this one for 8 yards. This was a lot of Charcandrick West filling in for Spencer Ware. This was Tyreek Hill had the monster 95-yard punt return, and this was just sort of a very Chiefs win in San Diego.
The Tyreek Hill thing is just getting incredible. It's every week it's some kind of conjured touchdown that he's scoring. It's absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, I don't want to say, the cliche is like the Bo Jackson Tecmo Bowl thing where you can kind of, I mean, there are just plays where he's just so much faster than everyone that he can sort of run wherever he wants and then eventually just pop out into the open field, and then he's just going to outrun everyone for 80 yards or so.
And he's become much more than just that, as we've talked about on other shows too. He's become a genuine wide receiver for them. So that's two big-time mismatch-making pieces they have. Kelce wasn't productive today, but he's been the best tight end in the league over the last 2 months. And then Hill's a guy that scares the daylights out of any defensive schemer. And they have those guys with a misdirection offense where one goes one way, one goes the other. There's multiple options on multiple plays. It's an incredibly difficult offense to play against. This is a very dangerous team, Gary. This Chiefs team is, they could very well, even though they don't have a quarterback that I think a lot of people associate with postseason type success, that doesn't matter. That doesn't change the geometry of the play designs and the speed they have with which to run them. This is a team I don't want to play against in the postseason.
Yeah, look, Jeremy Maclin was back in this one too, and he had a nice little day, and it's you completely forget about the guy. He entered the year as a clear-cut number one receiver in KC, missed some time with injuries, and he was a factor in this one, and they had that bye week to get a little bit healthier. And I mean, look, this day also kind of broke very nicely for the Patriots. Not that the New England Patriots are afraid of anyone, but if you're looking at the AFC, you say the two teams that maybe have a snowball's chance in going to Foxborough and winning a game are the Chiefs and the Steelers. And now there's no way the Patriots have to play both those teams. They only get one of them, matter how this one works out. So it's good to be Tom Brady, I guess. Wish you were Tom Brady today.
It's not so good to be Mike McCoy, though, right?
Exactly. The other headliner from this game is Mike McCoy. There was some news that he was going to have a meeting with John Spanos and Tom Telesco on Monday. Apparently that meeting was pushed up to Sunday evening, and Mike McCoy has been fired as the Chargers head coach. He will certainly be picked up immediately as a offense coordinator somewhere, and will be a very nice addition to someone. I mean, we've talked about this a couple of times. It's kind of not fair. I mean, it's not kind of not fair.
Decision.
It's just straight up not fair.
I hate this decision. It feels like a team says, well, we went 4-12 in 2015. We went 5-11. So what are we supposed to do? Well, we have to fire the coach. That's what you do when you go 9 wins in 2 years. It's extenuating circumstances. Put on the film, watch the football, and you see that it's still a well-put-together team. They haven't won the games. I know that matters. That's important. They were 9-7 in McCoy's first 2 years. It's not like McCoy's been a bum. He's had some injuries that have gone the wrong way. Every team has that. I get that. They've lost close games. That's also not good. But, again, put the football on, and you see a construction of a team. You see the point of the team. You see what they're trying to do. They have an identity. There's stuff to build on there. And more times than not in the NFL, that works, because what other teams are doing is also going around firing their coaches too soon. And so the teams that can stay in there and build the identity and have that gives them an advantage. And San Diego had a chance at that. They've had stability with John Pagano, D coordinator. I don't think anything was broken there. This is ownership doing what they think they're supposed to do, which I guess is what you're supposed to do if you're ownership, right? But I don't like the decision at all. This is a decision made based on paper and not on what's being done on the field.
Yeah, I mean, the headline is McCoy fire. The subhead would be Philip Rivers throws career high 21 interceptions, and so many of these interceptions were a result of young guys who aren't quite ready, who don't have the chemistry with Rivers, miscommunications, just not running sharp enough routes, that sort of thing. Tyrell Williams was the culprit on a couple of these. Tyrell Williams also had some, he sort of emerged as a guy who's going to be a serious threat down the line. It's like there's things to build off of with this team, and when you throw Keenan Allen back into the mix, and maybe if they end up bringing Stevie Johnson back, you got a nice thing going here. Danny Woodhead comes back. Any Giants fans? Andre Williams is out there for the Chargers today, and you would have smiled a little bit if you saw him dropping very catchable passes. But I don't know. I'm not going to say I'm surprised by this one, but like you said, it seems like a ownership that is more involved in playing the PR game at this point, and they might be
PR for
LA.
Who? They don't have a city, so PR for
exactly.
Who?
Well, they might be, and that's the other problem. If they're going to move this offseason, now you're throwing a coaching search in with this,
right? Yeah, and the Rams have showed you that you really don't want to do that. Because the Rams at least did their move and then made the coaching change, and I don't know if they planned to do that with Fisher, but I think that wasn't a total accident that it worked out that way. The Rams understood, you can one thing at a time here. And maybe Gary, you said that they have had young guys and the young guys aren't playing as well, and that's true. And maybe you could say that's poor coaching. That's an argument against coaching. But those young guys were forced into the lineup. They didn't have the offseason to work with them, and there's limited time with all this stuff. Things are just happening too quickly in the NFL. If people would take a break and have some patience, the foundation was just fine here. This is a very well-coached offense in San Diego, and you see that every week on film. The execution needed to be better, but the foundation was fine, and the guy that laid that foundation, who coached that offense, that was Mike McCoy and his staff, and now they're not there anymore.
Yeah. And you know what else would help? Sign your fourth overall pick and get him in camp instead of clutching to this stupid offset language precedent that you want to set. Maybe get your good guys in camp and build your team that way. Just an idea.
It didn't hurt. Yeah, it didn't help him. That didn't help him. Joey Bosa, to his credit, I think he's Defensive Rookie of the Year. He showed up and on day one looked like a dominant player, and I don't know how he did that, not being in camp. And he's admitted that did missing the camp time did hurt him. And he was still a dominant player. They've got a special guy there in him. They can really build that defense. They've got a lot of real unique talents. They have a cornerback, two corners who can cover, and Hayward, who had a great season, and Verrett, who had a better season in the first few weeks when he was in there. And they've got Melvin Ingram, a flexible, movable chess piece, along with Bosa. Corey Legit's underrated as a defensive dominator along the defensive line. Mm-hmm. That has some star power on that defense there.
Yeah, well, we'll see what they do this offseason. Obviously, with a potential move coming up, it's going to be a very tumultuous offseason for the Chargers. Phillip Rivers just turned 35 about a month ago. And, we'll see. We'll see what they can pull together here.
Number six.
But we will move on to topic number six, and that is the New England Patriots going down to Miami. And unlike a year ago, they win it pretty easily against the Dolphins, and they clinched the number one seed with this one. Miami, actually, they made this fairly interesting, and, you know, they fell behind 14-0 early, and then Matt Moore sort of kept them in it and took them back, and had Damian Williams not had a ball punched out in the red zone by Devin McCourty, this might have been one to keep an eye on in the fourth quarter. But ultimately, this one ends up a 3-touchdown win for the Patriots, who just keep on doing their thing. And, they are the heavy favorites to come out of the AFC at this point.
Yeah, that McCourty play was huge because New England had a 6 or 7 point lead at the time, so one touchdown lead. And Miami was driving. They'd finally found the rhythm. Matt Moore was completing balls at the intermediate levels, which is the same thing Miami got hot and did in the week two matchup against New England when they almost came back from a big deficit in that game. That was with Ryan Tannehill, of course. And then McCourty forced the fumble. Shea McClellan, right spot, right time, scooped it up and ran about 60 yards the other direction. Mm-hmm. And your 7 point deficit became suddenly a 2-score deficit when it was about to be an even score game or something along those lines, or 3-score. It was a big swing. It's a double digit point swing, essentially. And that was the game for you there. I don't know if there's a whole lot to say about New England, Gary, because nothing's changed with their MO, except that one thing that stands out and that no one talks about with Tom Brady, and it stood out again in this game, his precision accuracy is unbelievable, and it gets lost in the shuffle of that offense because everything's so quick, and it's 7-yard gains, 8-yard gains here and there. But there are some of their 14 and 15-yard plays look like they're 7 and 8-yard plays, and the difference in the two is Brady's accuracy is so precise. They maximize their run-after-catch opportunities at almost all times. And he's just such a great thrower of the football, and I don't think people talk about that very much.
Yeah, and look, this was a Julian Edelman game, and this was Edelman getting to take advantage of a lot of very precisely placed balls here. Edelman ended up with 151, which is a career high in yardage for him, which was
that surprised me. Wouldn't you have guessed he'd had? I know that's a lot of yardage, and he got over 1,000 yards today as well, which is only the second time he's done that. I would have guessed he'd had slightly bigger numbers than that, and I mean that as a compliment to the guy. I wrote a few years ago that Julian Edelman was a replaceable cog in that machine because they create opportunities for him with their motioning and their formationing and getting him on linebackers. And I was dead wrong about that because when we saw him go out of the lineup last year, that was a totally different looking offense without him.
Yeah.
He's a unique player. He and Doug Baldwin are the two best pure slot guys in the NFL. And really, they're not pure slot guys anymore because they've expanded their route trees this season, and both have started winning on the perimeter. That's what stood out with each of them, Baldwin and Edelman. Edelman is phenomenal on outbreaking routes near the sidelines now, too.
Yeah, and look, this was as if they needed more weapons here. This was Michael Floyd making his presence felt for the first time since joining the Patriots. Had a tough run after catch to score a touchdown. He also made all the highlight reels with a crushing block on Tony Lippett to spring Edelman for that 77-yard catch and run touchdown. So this was, I'm not going to call it a feel-good story with Michael Floyd, but it's a story. It's a story that's happening.
Yeah. He does fit. He is an interesting addition because his body type, he's great on in-breaking routes. And remember a few years ago when they had Brandon LaFell there, they had a very specific role for LaFell. They'd run those skinny post patterns off of quick play action. And LaFell's always been sensational, and that's what he's built his career on. Floyd could give them a more expansive version of that if they can have time to grow into it. And today was a big step forward for that. He had a nice game today.
Yeah. Well, the Patriots, of course, number one seed in the AFC. The Dolphins had already clinched their playoff spot. They will be the number six seed. They will go to Pittsburgh in the wild card round. And as we keep on saying today, we will have a deep dive on all the wild card matchups on the Thursday look ahead show. So keep an eye out for that. But for right now, we are going to move on to topic number seven, and that is the Seahawks.
Number seven.
This one was a lot more interesting than people thought, but the Seahawks end up holding off the 49ers in what would ultimately be Chip Kelly's last game. We'll start with Seattle, though, and we've talked about the offense a lot, and we'll talk about them more on Thursday. They are set to host the Lions in a wildcard round game. But I do want to ask you what you've seen from this defense since Earl Thomas went down.
Well, and I'll be honest, I haven't seen this game yet. I don't want to BS our listeners. I do want to talk Chip Kelly, though. But this defense in the bigger picture of things, you notice a little bit of a difference. Stephen Terrell has been flat at times in some of his angles, and they've paid a little bit of a price for that. Mm-hmm. But approach-wise, they haven't changed a lot. I wondered if they were good. They've done more man coverage this season. That's something Chris Richard has installed for them. Interestingly, so has Dan Quinn in Atlanta, their former D coordinator. He's done more man coverage with the Falcons. So teams have gotten more comfortable against the cover three. They haven't figured it out. You're not going to just solve it. It's not when there's that much talent on the defense. But they've gotten comfortable enough that these cover three defenses are starting to play more man coverage. Jacksonville did down the stretch as well. under Gus Bradley. So I wondered if we would continue to see that with Thomas out, because Thomas had been a big part of their man coverage. He usually took the number four most threatening receiver on the field. And we have seen it. They didn't do it at first, the first few weeks, but the last few weeks they've done more man-to-man. So schematically it's the same defense. They're not quite as secure in the back end, of course. But really, Gary, what makes this defense go, the more I watch it, it's that pass rush and that defensive line. And when those guys show up, it's a hard defense to play against. And when they don't, we saw the Green Bay game, for example, a few weeks ago, where that pass rush did not exist at all, and the defense looked very porous. So it's Michael Bennett, it's Cliff Averill, it's Frank Clark, and then it's Bobby Wagner, who's become more of a blitzer for him this season. Those are the four guys.
Yep, yeah. Well, we will, of course, talk about the Seahawks more on Thursday, but let's talk some Chip Kelly here. The 49ers, one-and-done coach, back-to-back years, so that's something to, I don't know, maybe they'll raise a banner or something at Levi's Stadium. But, yeah, Trent Baalke is out, the GM, and Chip Kelly will follow him out the door. I don't know. It's kind of the same thing with the Bills, where it's like, okay, what were your expectations for this team? What should your expectations have been? And 2-14, yeah, that's a bit much. But this was, I said before the year, this, along with the Cleveland Browns, the 49ers were the one team that had no chance of making the postseason. You figure best case scenario, maybe you go 5-11, 6-10. It's like, I don't know, why did you let Baalke have another year? And why did you let him, you know, bring Chip Kelly in if you weren't going to make any sort of long-term investment with the with what you had here?
At some point, a very bad mistake was made by Jed York and company, and that was either now, today, when they fired Baalke and they fired Chip Kelly, or it was a year ago where they invested in those guys. But something doesn't add up, because there's no way that reasonable thinking people would look at this season and say, well, they didn't live up to expectations, we're going to overhaul everything. It can't be about this season, because this season was a lost cause from the beginning, and people had to know that. The roster could not compete. It's a rebuilding effort. So I don't know where things went awry. I don't know if there's something else behind the scenes with Chip Kelly that they've learned that they didn't want to deal with. We don't know that kind of thing. But if from afar, just watching the surface, it's a totally incongruent decision. I thought the offense was exactly what you would expect from Chip Kelly, and the results were exactly what you'd expect given the talent that Chip Kelly had to work with.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can think of is they just wanted to start completely fresh and basically whoever they bring in not say, okay, you're married to Chip Kelly for 3 years. But again, it brings up the question, well, why did he keep Trent Baalke on for another year?
In that case, the mistake was made a year ago then. And I kind of agree with you if it's that scenario. Baalke, remember too, Gary, because they went to the Super Bowl in 2012. Baalke was the GM in 2011, but a lot of the players that defined that Super Bowl team were brought in by Scott McLuhan, the previous GM. And McLuhan's done a good job in Washington as well, a pretty good job. I think he had a great roster built there in San Francisco. So the Baalke era hasn't quite been as great as I think his Wikipedia page will say, for example. So I don't mind them resetting that. I don't mind them pushing the reset button on that one so much. But they probably should have done it a year ago, because they already had one wasted season under Jim Tomsula where they didn't want to invest in him as the head coach. And so that year was nothing invested, nothing gained. It's just an empty year. They now have two of those in a row.
Yep. Yeah. And at some point this offseason, you and I will discuss whether Chip Kelly will ever be a success as a head coach in the NFL. I don't even know if he'll get another opportunity at this point. Most guys don't get a third crack at it, but I'm not convinced he's not suitable to be a head coach. I question his talent evaluation, but if you keep him away from the personnel side, you could sort of limit the damage he can do there. And I just wonder about that system. You know, it's a simplified system. They rely on tempo, and it worked when the Eagles had good players. It didn't work when the Eagles had bad players. Didn't work with the 49ers when they had bad players.
I don't disagree with that.
That is a deep dive discussion for another time.
Number 8.
Right now we move on to topic number 8, and that is the Houston Texans. I mean, they had nothing to play for in Tennessee today, and this would this end up being a nice season-ending victory for the Titans, who had a good season for the Tennessee Titans, and I think Titans fans can be excited. They also, if you are a draft dork, the Titans do have a top five pick in this upcoming draft from the Rams trade last offseason, so you get to stock up with two high draft picks. But the Texans, Tom Savage gets the start. I think they would have loved to see him go another full game here and sort of you know, get a tune up for the postseason. And Savage goes down with I guess what ended up being diagnosed as a concussion. Brock Osweiler steps in and sort of looks like the same guy he looked like all season, and they just don't have enough to get it done.
The interesting part of this equation, because I think if Savage is healthy, the initial reaction is if Savage is healthy for this weekend, you play him. He's your quarterback now. But the complicating factor is if he can't get cleared quickly, if he doesn't get cleared till Friday and he's not practicing, I don't know if you do play him then. I don't know if you play an inexperienced QB in a playoff game on a week where he hasn't practiced.
Yep.
And against a team that's seen you once, and Brock Osweiler's seen that Raiders defense, it's a different Raiders defense than when they played them back in November. They do a few more things now in Oakland. This is a hard spot to be in, Gary, and I don't know what the right answer is. I do not envy Bill O'Brien in this situation at all.
Yeah, I mean, look, the one plus from today is Osweiler got DeAndre Hopkins a little more involved. Hopkins had one long catch and run. But, you know, it was – geez. Yeah. I mean, you bring up a really good point. This is not business as usual for Tom Savage.
It can't be. And then with Osweiler, and I don't want to dip too much into the psychological stuff, but you got me thinking about it because you mentioned Hopkins. The problem with Osweiler is he's not a cut-it-loose type of quarterback. He doesn't have the quickness in his decision-making or certainly in his physical skill set. There's nothing loose and decisive about him. He's very measured and methodical. And that style of play really does not fit DeAndre Hopkins. He's a guy with tight windows that you have to throw into because he doesn't separate well. He's a contested catch guy, and you have to be willing to turn it loose. And so Osweiler, you say, well, he's better today in that regard. How will he be in the postseason when the stakes are higher? Is he going to become more of himself and more of the methodical guy? Or now that he's had this benching, does part of him, is the pressure off a little bit because there's kind of a nothing to lose thing at this point? His contract's guaranteed next year, and he's already been thinking he's going to be the backup next season. Mm-hmm. And maybe he plays better. And we don't know the answer to that. We'd only be guessing. But the guys in that building in Houston, they don't know the answer to that either. They'd be guessing, but they're more educated guessers because they're around Osweiler. That's another scenario you have to consider, is what's Brock Osweiler's mentality right now? And I don't like to get into that, but with him, the mentality has been a factor this season, and how do you forecast that?
Yep. No, absolutely. I have one more random note from this game, and that was, so Wendell Williams in that Jaguars game when Tom Savage came in relief made a great catch on the sideline, and it didn't click until today. He made an unbelievable toe tap catch downfield off an Osweiler throw, and Wendell Williams is a guy, NAIA guy from College of the Cumberlands or something like that. I don't know what they call that university specifically, but he came on the radar last draft season for a 4.19 40-yard dash at a pro day.
Wow. So, and that's,
he's also a dude. He's 5'10". They list him at 185. I know when I saw him during draft season, he looked like he was maybe 145. I mean, he looks like a little spindly point guard or something. But yeah, that clicked with me today, and I was really excited. I was like, oh, 4.19 guy. That's who that is.
I'm surprised we haven't heard more about him because they drafted Fuller, who was known for his speed as well. So clearly that was an emphasis for them this past offseason, was just to get faster on offense, which kind of implies you want to get more aggressive, which gets back to some of the problems we've had about Osweiler and the fit there in that system.
Yeah, yep. Well, we'll have more on the Texans on Thursday, of course, for the Look Ahead show, deep diving all the playoff previews. One more thing about Thursday, we will do our usual giant mailbag. We moved the mailbag off of 10 things. If you missed the last couple of shows, it's on the Thursday show now. We will get to as many questions as possible. Send your questions at Andy_Benoit, at GGrambling_SI. Send them to Facebook. Facebook, you can write as long as you want. If you send them there, Andy and I both have pages. Or you can just send them to talkback@themmqb.com. Send playoff questions. Send offseason questions. Send coaching carousel questions. Send whatever you got, and we will answer as many as possible. And, of course, if you are going to be keeping up on all the playoff stuff this week, Albert Breer's podcast, Peter King's podcast are both going to have very playoff-centric shows, and you will want to keep up with all that. Albert's out on Tuesday, Peter on Wednesday. Listen to the whole MMQB family, and you will be fully prepared for football this weekend.
Number 9.
But as for us, we are prepared for topic number 9, and that is the lightning-ish round. We are going to quick hit these games as quickly as we can, Andy, and we are going to start with the Bengals and the Ravens. Bengals D-line actually shows up again, and this was a win for Cincinnati. Steve Smith Sr., quiet in his final game, only 3 catches. And the only the big news coming out of this one is Marty Mordenweg might be out as offensive coordinator in Baltimore.
It would not be a Ravens offseason without an offensive coordinator search. So everything's business as usual there in Baltimore. Steve Smith, probably a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah, he's got to be. And I got one quick note on Steve Smith, and I'm going to be a douchey journalist here and say I've been to Steve Smith's house, and he has a lovely family. But my favorite part about Steve Smith and his home and basically everything about him, he has an arcade in his basement that includes Burger Time, which is the greatest arcade game of all time. And it was much respect for having that obscure game that prepped us all for careers in fast food, I guess.
Real quick, what were you there at his house for?
We just shot a thing. It was a photo shoot. Boy, it was his Panthers days. So it was probably like 2007, 2008 or something, back when I was with the SI Kids. We just, did a nice shot. His wife did not expect us to come, and she's a lovely woman, but she was kind of like, oh, great, media's here. But yeah, he had Burger Time in his basement.
Steve Smith not, how did she not expect it? Did he not tell her or something?
I don't know. It was a whole thing, and it was like he had the development was so new that there was no address, so it was like the photographer and I sort of drove around Charlotte for a while until we sort of stumbled upon it. It was a whole thing. But,
right.
Yeah, Burger Time in his house, and that's why I respect that man more than anyone.
Look at me. I'm the one slowing down the lightning round today. Are you proud of me for that?
Exactly.
I even talked to you before about how we need to go quick on lightning round. We got 8 games to get through. It's way too long for a lightning round, and now we're still on the first game because I'm asking you about Steve Smith's arcade and his wife in his house.
It is the bizarro lightning round. That's how we're starting off. Yeah. We'll go on to Carolina and Tampa Bay. Another terrible day for Cam Newton. Panthers came back. They went for 2, tried to win it at the end after a touchdown that normally would have tied the game. But, you know, nice day for the Bucs defensive backfield. But Cam, I mean, they got a whole offseason to figure out what the heck they're going to do with this offense because what they did this year did not work.
They need to get back to the ground game and making that the foundation, meaning 2 tight end sets and 2 running back sets. Whether you're running the ball out of them is almost ancillary. You need to be playing out of those running looks. And the other issue, and I don't know how you solve this because I think if it could have been solved, it would have been solved by now. Cam Newton reverted back to a lot of his bad habits mechanically, and his bad habits are very costly. He is a very poor mechanical thrower of the football right now. And if that doesn't get corrected, then it's going to be the same thing. It's going to be an inconsistent offense from year to year, which is what I thought it would be before last season when Newton proved me really wrong. But last season's looking more and more like the exception to Cam Newton rather than the rule because the years before that, he was inconsistent too.
You were critical of Newton, and then he was great. And then you started praising Newton for being great, and I think he's just messing with you. I think he just
he's showing me. Then he's showing
what
me. They got stuff to work. Yeah, they have stuff to work on there.
What a nightmare season for him. The Colts, nice comeback win. They fell behind by 17, came back to beat the Jaguars at home. This was a whole lot of Andrew Luck. He connects with Doyle for the touchdown with 9 seconds left, and nice season-ending win for the Colts, who, you know, have their work cut out for them going forward.
And then I'll be fair, because people know I'm an Andrew Luck guy, and I was just harsh on Cam. Luck was not great down the stretch this season either. This game aside,
yeah.
There were some times he did not read the field in the last few weeks of the season with quite the same consistency or clarity that we've come to expect. And I don't want to be ominous about it. We don't want to blow it up, but it's just out of fairness that I think that's the thing to say about him. His vision was not quite as sharp as it usually is over the last month of the season.
Yep, yep. The Vikings finished their disappointing year with a big win against the Bears. The offensive line kind of held up here. They got TJ Clemmings some help. They end up hanging 38 points on the Bears, who have to settle for a Matt Barkley touchdown catch for their only touchdown of the day.
I would hope the Bears defense disappoints me a little bit the way they finished this season, because they had a nice season overall on defense. If you look at the pieces to that defense, you look at what they were asked to do in the context and how they played, they had a good season, but they fell apart in this game and they fell apart last week against Washington. They got destroyed when they blitzed the Redskins, and they're not a blitzing defense, but they gave up some huge plays on blitzes. So overall, it was just a bad finish to the season on what's been a disappointing season in Chicago. And that bad finish is disappointing in itself, because the defense was the one bright spot for them, and now you wonder a little bit about that heading into the offseason.
Yeah, lots of smoke too. We'll see what happens there. Does Vic Fangio come back? Are Fangio and Fox getting along? Does Fox come back at this point? I mean, we'll see what happens to the Bears this offseason. Vikings, obviously, they'll have a quarterback question if Teddy Bridgewater is healthy. I know what your answer would be to that, and we'll talk about that later. But
we've got all offseason for that one, yeah.
They love Bridgewater, and I would think they would give Teddy the nod if he is healthy and ready to go. Dallas goes to Philadelphia and loses, but nobody really cares. Nice moment. Tony Romo comes in for a drive, 6 plays, 81 yards. Throws the touchdown to Terrence Williams. They played 3 quarterbacks in this game, Dak Prescott, Tony Romo, and Mark Sanchez. And the fact that Mark Sanchez played kind of decided this one. Sanchez had 21 dropbacks, completed 9 passes. So that's how it went.
I don't have much to say on that. It's not a game I watched, and it's honestly not one I'm going to watch on the film, because you don't want to get a false picture of a team. And I'm not saying like, well, they went out and did wrong stuff, or they didn't try, or any of that. I'm not saying that. But this game's not. This was not a representation of the Dallas Cowboys. So I'm not going to add anything to this game. It didn't count to me, and I don't think it's counted to them.
Yep. Browns almost end the season on a winning streak. They end up, Isaiah Crowell, who had a really nice game, ends up coughing up a fumble inside the 5 when they were setting up for a game-winning chip shot, goes to overtime. Browns kick the field goal. Steelers come back. The old Jarvis Landry to Kobe Hamilton connection for the game-winning touchdown. And I like Kobe Hamilton. I think he was a nice little piece for the Steelers this season, though I can't believe they gave him Heath Miller's old number. I think that was too soon.
Okay. I hear you. The guy I like is Eli Rogers in that offense, and I'm looking up what he did in this game. I see he actually led him with 6 catches, 61 yards. You mentioned Hamilton, but Rogers to me is the guy that they had some receivers that they knew had to develop this season, because Sammy Coates got hurt, Marcus Wheaton got hurt, Darius Hayward Bay got hurt. Martavis Bryant got suspended. So 4 of your top 5 receivers have not been there. So who gets developed? Who steps up? And Rodgers has become a very good slot route runner for them. And I think he'll be an important part of what they do in the playoffs. And that'll start next week against Miami. Although when you face Miami, they're pretty good in the slot. They're not great. They're not great anywhere on that defense.
Yeah.
But I think where you attack them is at the left corner spot. Maxwell has been in there. If he's not healthy, which he hasn't been, then it's Xavier Howard. And I think that's where you'll see Antonio Brown line up. They're pretty good at the other 2 corner spots.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, if you missed it, Ben Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, and Le'Veon Bell all sat this one out. So Steelers fans who, I don't know, somehow missed all the action yesterday because they were too hungover. You don't need to fret about this game. The Cardinals end on a winning note. They go to LA and just hammer the Rams. Rams never should have played Jared Goff this year. They just can't block anyone. The sad note off this one, David Johnson injures his knee. early reports was that it is meniscus as opposed to ligaments, and that's good news. Who cares about your meniscus? Just keep that ACL intact. And Larry Fitzgerald ends up 107 catches, leads the NFL. He surpassed Antonio Brown, who, of course, did not play at all today. So Fitz is the league leader, and now we will wait to hear whether he comes back in 2017.
Kind of a weird year for receiving leaders, isn't it? Because Fitz led the league in catches, and didn't T.Y. Hilton wind up number one in yards this year?
I think so, yeah.
I would not have guessed either of those guys. And usually one thing I love to do is have someone just say a name to me and I guess their stats without looking, because I watch the film and you get a feel for this. I would not have guessed either of those guys to be at the top. I knew they were productive, but I didn't think either one was at the top of the league in their areas. Fitz is a receiver, production catch guy, and then Hilton as a yards and big play guy. I didn't know they were having that kind of year.
You know what I think? So Hilton led with 1448. Julio Jones was second with 1409. He missed two games entirely and played like parts of other games, which is just ridiculous. Especially how many times do we talk about this year? Like, oh, Julio Jones was more of a decoy in this game. They went with Taylor Gabriel. They went with Mohamed Sanu. I mean, that's absurd.
Yeah, Julio Jones had a great, great season. I had him in my MVP discussion until he missed those games at the end.
Yeah. Yep, and we will wrap up Week 17, the Jets back in the win column. They beat the Bills. This was Doug Whaley's Bills. This is the team that he dreamed of with E.J. Manuel under center, and had you not seen E.J. Manuel in a while, he was pretty much exactly the same guy who, I don't even know if he's number two caliber, but, you know, that's the guy Whaley wanted in there, and it's Whaley's show now. And by the way, he will meet the media for the first time in a long time early this week. So maybe get some answers
if
there.
If you want more on these teams, just go look at Jenny Verinteress's Twitter account, because she's all over these teams. I have nothing to add here.
Well, she had really good stuff on the Rex departure, if you wanted
to. Oh, she's great on these teams, especially Buffalo. Jenny's the best there is on these.
But, yeah. Interesting off seasons coming up for both those teams, neither of whom really have a quarterback at this point.
Number 10.
But we will go on to topic number 10, and that is the weekly awards. We will do, whether Andy likes or not, we're going to do annual awards on the Thursday show. Not a huge portion of it because we have playoff football to talk, but these will just be for Week 17, Offensive Player of the Week. I'm going to start, Andy, and I'll just give it to Tom Brady because he set the tone. He was basically perfect early on in this game and didn't really get much less perfect as the day went on.
I'll go Aaron Rodgers because I wrote about him this week, and I imagine people could look at it as what I wrote as being critical because I've said there's not a rhythm to his play. There's no foundation, and so I want people to understand that. That doesn't mean I think Aaron Rodgers isn't a great, great quarterback. He's just such a different style of QB, and when it's working, it works in ways we've never seen for anyone else before, and it's been working for several weeks now. So out of just respect for the stats and the raw talent and the outcome and the performance, I'm going Aaron Rodgers.
All right. Defensive Player of the Week, I'm going Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. Even aside from the two interceptions, including the game clincher, he was a complete shutdown guy today. I think I saw he only allowed one catch in this one.
I'm going to stick with the Giants. I'm going to give a two-part here. I'm going to do the Giants and the Patriots, and I'm going to go their interior defensive linemen, Damon Harrison for the Giants, who continued to be dominant in run defense as he's been all season. He's been the best interior run defender in the NFL this season. And then for New England, Trey Flowers showed up a number of times, and he's a guy we'll need to talk about him more when we do the divisional round show in a few weeks. Because he's become their most versatile defensive lineman, and he's a great technician, and he's an effort player as well. And that's not a guy I expected to have a breakout season, but as the season's gone on, he's gotten better and better, and you see it in the run defense and in the pass rush. He had a sack today, or I think it wasn't a sack, but he caused an incompletion on a third down and 14 early in the game on a three-man rush, just out-techniquing center Craig Urbick. He has plays like that every single week in New England.
Yep. Special teams player of the week, I will give it to Tyreek Hill for that ridiculous 95-yard punt return.
I will give it to Tyreek Hill for that ridiculous 95-yard punt return.
You got to give it to Justin Tucker. You already said you give it to Justin Tucker every week.
All right, I'll go Justin Tucker. What did he do to
hit a 30-yard field goal and he hit an extra point? By the way, Justin Tucker.
Oh, yeah, then of course I'm going Tucker. Yeah. Tucker.
He only missed one kick this year. Do you remember what it was?
Give me a clue.
Monday Nighter.
Monday Nighter. Who'd they play
Shea
on the
McClellan card? Leaps the center and basically.
Oh, that's the only Monday. That's
with his sternum.
I was in New York for our holiday thing, our meetings, and that's the only Monday night game I missed this season. I watched the film, but I didn't see the special teams play on film because I don't
watch
that
was the only kick Tucker missed all year where McClellan blocked it with his chest. Coach of the week. I'm going to give it. Colts fans will actually hate this, but I'm going to give it to Chuck Pagano. I thought it was a. It was nice to see the Colts stick around in a game where it looked like they might just not show up. And again, that's kind of on him for not showing up early. But, you know, they come back, they get the win, and you could see the reaction of the players after that winning touchdown. The guys sort of mobbing him a little bit. They want to play for the guy, and he needs more talent. He needs better players on the defensive side of the ball because they can't win with the guys they have now.
I like Chuck Pagano's a Boise guy. Did you know that?
I did not know that, no.
Yeah, he lives like probably 8 minutes from me here in Boise, in fact.
He's not still here there, very much. Like in the offseason?
Yeah, but he's not here very much, but that's where that's his residence. I will go with kind of like what I did with Aaron Rodgers. I'm going to go Mike McCarthy because we also have talked on this show all season long as my coach of the week. We've talked all season long about, well, they don't have man beaters. They don't do this well. They're a rudimentary offense, blah, blah, blah. The fact of the matter is they're an offense that's gotten better over the course of this season. They've had to incorporate a bunch of young guys or new guys that they did not expect. Even like a Jared Cook, they incorporated him and used him very well. And they have done a better job with route combinations, especially I put on that Vikings film from a few weeks ago where it was a division rival. They anticipated what they'd get from the coverages. They killed Minnesota's cover two and cover four with route combination. So it's a better, they're looking better than they have early in the year. They're playing better. And if we're going to be harsh on Mike McCarthy, and I don't regret doing that, I think they didn't look good when they should have at other times. We need to also acknowledge when they've played well, and he's done that, and his team's done that.
There you go. All right, Andy, that is a wrap on the regular season. We will have huge shows coming up in the playoffs. We'll have the Thursday look-ahead show. We will also have the usual Monday show during the entire postseason. For now, thank you very much to our producer, Matt Havia, and our editor, Chris Basil, who make us sound good. Also, Jeff Irwin on the research on New Year's Day. Huge help there. Thank you very much to HelloFresh, our sponsor. Please support them the way they support our show. HelloFresh.com. Use the promo code TEN. Get $35 off your first week of orders. But most of all, thank you to you guys listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Send those questions in for the Thursday mailbag. Andy_Benoit, GGrambling_SI. We are both on Facebook. Send super long questions there or just email them to talkback@themmqb.com. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB Podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys on Thursday.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.